Season 4, Episode 24. This is Black History Moments, a podcast dedicated to telling the stories of those who have been forgotten or who are lesser known in our history books and texts. Happy Black History Month. It is the last day of Black History Month. If you are listening to this episode on the day that it released, I hope that you had a beautiful and Black Black History Month. If you're new here, I'm Shakira White, an HBCU graduate and lover of all things Black and historical. Do you remember the cartoon Charlie Brown? Or maybe you remember George of the Jungle? Did you know that a Black man helped make those? And that Black man was the first Black person to break into the cartoon animation field when he was hired at Warner Brothers. He's referred to as the Jackie Robinson of animation, and his name was Frank Cavalier Braxton. Franklin Cavalier Braxton Jr. was born in Los Angeles, California on March 31st, 1929, to his father. Of course, Frank was a junior, so his dad's name was Franklin Cavalier Braxton Sr., and his mom's name was Mignon A. Calloway Braxton. Now, growing up from childhood into his teenage years, Frank developed a love for drawing. It's said that he would always have a sketchbook or a notepad and a pencil with him wherever he went because he loved drawing so much. He would go around the city of LA drawing sights that he would come across, and he would also draw caricatures of different ideas that came to his mind. Those were his two major focuses in his drawings. And in high school, he was highly involved in the different art projects around school, and it's said that his yearbooks would be filled with different drawings of events that the school was having and also caricatures of his classmates and his family. When Frank graduated from Los Angeles Manual Arts High School in 1947, he went on to Los Angeles City College, where he went to study art and music. Of course, it tracks. While attending college, Frank drove cabs at night to earn a little money in his pockets, as, you know, many college students try to do. You try to find a side hustle to help fund the things. So that is what Frank did. And he was also taking singing lessons from a man named Lee Wintler. Also taking voice lessons from Lee was a man by the name of Ben Washam. Now, Ben is going to be very, very pivotal in our story. So I'm imagining that one day at voice lessons, the two just happened to start talking, and Ben mentioned that his job was as a senior animator at Warner Brothers. I think we all know Warner Brothers. I don't think I have to explain that. So this made Frank so excited because this has been his dream, right? Since he was a child, he's always loved drawing. Not only was Ben working at Warner Brothers, Ben was working in animation, in cartoons, at Warner Brothers. So Frank was excited, so much so that he showed Ben his portfolio of drawings, which of course he's been drawing since childhood, so I'm imagining that the portfolio is pretty thick by this time. And it didn't take much for Ben to recognize that Frank had talent, natural born talent, and he had a knack for getting these characters on paper. Ben knew that Frank had what it took to work in animation at Warner Brothers, but he also knew that Frank being Black would be the hurdle to getting him in the door. So Ben came up with a genius plan. In an article by Floyd Norman, who was a mentee of Frank's, here's how the rest of that story went. It was Warner Brothers Animation in the 1950s. Animator Benny Washam walked into the office of production manager Johnny Burton and said, "I hear Warner Brothers has a racist policy and refuses to hire Blacks." A furious Burton wheeled around in his office chair and shouted, "Whoever said that is a liar. It's not true." "Well then," said Benny, There's a young black animator outside who's looking for a job. I guess he's come to the right place. And with that, so began the animation career of Frank Braxton. So it was months before Warner Brothers finally made the decision to officially hire Frank. I'm sure you can guess why it took so long. Once he was hired, this made Frank the first and only black animator in Hollywood. Prior to Frank's entry, animators were all white and mostly, if not, all male, like many other industries in America during the mid-1900s. Starting out, Frank was what they used to call an in-betweener. So it was someone who just kind of worked in between different projects because the work culture and learning everything in that field was so difficult. Many people did not survive long, but Frank had talent. The meme where it's like, I just needed the platform. This was Frank, right? So it did not take long for him to move up from an in-between person to becoming an apprentice and assistant to being the man who fought for him to be hired. And after a while, he went on to be a journeyman animator. Now, I did not know what a journeyman animator was, so I looked it up, and here's what I found. A journeyman is a worker who is skilled in a trade or craft who has successfully completed an official apprenticeship qualification. Journeymen are considered competent and authorized to work in that field as a fully qualified employee. So Frank had reached a level in the animation field that proved that he was skilled enough to work on more complex projects outside of just assisting Ben. So personally, I love cartoons. So I was curious about what cartoons were coming out of Warner Brothers at this time. And here are a few of them. Bugs Bunny, Speedy Gonzalez, Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, and many more familiar characters that we've all seen at one point or another. After 2 years at Warner Brothers, the studio shut down to retool, and Frank had to make a move. So he left, and his next move was Disney. That's amazing, right? Like, being the only black animator in Hollywood, you go from working at Warner Brothers to Disney. Well, maybe not. Frank only stayed at Disney for 10 days before he left, and there is absolutely no information anywhere about why he left. So we don't really know the reason, but if I had to guess, I'd probably guess that it was related to the color of his skin. But this train does not stop here. Remember Ben, who Frank meets at the voice class? Ben gets him hired at Warner Brothers, and then Frank eventually works his way up to becoming an apprentice or assistant to Ben. That same Ben who helped him get hired, he knew a man named Bill Hertz. Bill was a producer at a small production house that specialized in animated commercials. Now, Ben recommended Frank for a job at the production house with Bill. I know this is a lot of B names. Even though Bill didn't know much of anything about Frank's expertise or his work, anything he'd worked on, Bill had no clue. But Ben went and pitched to Frank and told him, hey, I know a guy, he's great. You need to hire him. And I think it's so nice that Ben was such a great friend to Frank. I feel like everyone needs someone, at least one person, in their corner that will be vocal for them when they can't be for themselves. In a quote from Floyd's article, it says, "It wasn't long before Hertz began to see how well Frank could draw. He also began to know Frank as a person, but it wasn't always easy. Frank could be merry and fun to be around, but he was also compelled to succeed. It was inevitable in such a complicated art form, combining acting and good drawing, that Frank would occasionally fall on his face. When that happened, and it wasn't often, he would be plunged into despair. He could not tolerate failure. It was then that Bill Hertz became aware of the pressures that Frank, as the first Black in the animation business, was under. When he told Frank that his work was good, it wasn't enough. He wanted it to be the best. As a result, Frank will work and rework and rework and rework a scene of animation to achieve perfection. This drive for excellence meant that he could not turn out as much work as his associates because he wouldn't turn in a scene until it was right. He was, understandably, extremely sensitive to criticism. After all, he had a lot at stake. And if that's not relatable, I don't know what is, okay? That pressure of being the only representation in the room, so feeling like you have to overperform and not just do a good job, but do an amazing job simply because the entire future of other people who look like you coming into those doors rests on your shoulders. That's a lot of pressure. Remember, Frank was the only Black animator in Hollywood at this time. So if he didn't do a good job, that would be the only excuse they needed to not hire other Black people into that industry. Floyd's article continues, though some animation old-timers insist the door was always open, it was difficult for people of color to get into the animation business in those days. Back then, there was no such thing as training for animation. You just walked into a studio and hung around until somebody gave you something to do. That's pretty good for people who could be invisible in the surroundings. But in those days, for Blacks to get any kind of job of prestige was very rare. Most Black artists preferred to go into the broader fields of illustration and painting. The field of animation was highly specialized, and few Black artists even knew about it. So as Frank is working, he starts getting frustrated. For his entire career, he's been the only Black person in the room. There were no Black animators outside of himself. There were no Black directors, no Black studio executives, no Black writers, and it seemed like the progress was not happening. So, Frank left. The country, that is. Frank left for Barcelona, Spain, where he managed an animation cartoon studio named Estudios Moro. I hope I pronounced it correctly. And he stayed there for a year, give or take some time, maybe a little over a year, maybe a little under. But we know around the year mark, he was there managing the studio before he returned back to the United States. This break abroad was just what he needed. Frank came back re-energized. He was pumped. He was ready to dive head first into the American animation industry again. And also, by the way, it said that while he was abroad, he felt free because he was finally able to experience life without prejudice. And I find this very interesting because I often think about artists like Billie Holiday, who we have an episode on, James Baldwin, Josephine Baker, all of these people, and how they talk about their time living abroad, right? And being so free because they were finally able to just live without the constant reminder that they were seen as second-class citizens. And I hate that now these people are so prolific, right? And we see them as these giants in their industries. But the truth is that when they were alive, that wasn't the case. When they were alive, they were just Black people. Whether it was a Black person who wrote a book, James Baldwin, or a Black person who sung, Billie Holiday, or a Black person who was an entertainer, Josephine Baker, or in Frank's case, a Black person who drew cartoons. But They were more than that. However, the way America saw it, the color of their skin far outweighed anything they accomplished or created. Frank went on to work on cartoons like Peabody's Improbable History and The Bullwinkle Show, and he even produced the animated series Mr. Magoo. In 1960, Frank was elected president, come on, Mr. President, of the Screen Cartoonists Guild, which made him the first Black person to be president of any film union in Hollywood. That is major. 4 years later, in 1964, he directed Linus, the Lionhearted, and feeling renewed in that his career was on an upward incline, he started gathering equipment from different studios around the city because he saw that there were no animation programs for inner city youth. They had acting, they had singing classes, dance classes, paint classes. But Frank thought that it would be amazing for these kids to also learn animation. So with all of the equipment that he gathered at the different studios, he began teaching at the Performing Arts Center of Los Angeles. In 1967, Frank worked on the Peanuts special, You're in Love, Charlie Brown, and also He's Your Dog, Charlie Brown. He even directed George of the Jungle and Cap'n Crunch. Frank had finally, after all these years, found the key to breaking down the barrier within his mind and also the ones that society set. Around the same time, Frank was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, which is a cancer that affects the body's ability to fight infection. And unfortunately, this started to limit his ability to work. Floyd, who was a mentee of Frank, said, "The last time I saw Frank was at Jay Ward's studio out on Sunset Boulevard. I still remember Frank dressed in his cool 60s garb with his guitar leaning against his drawing table. He always had a theatrical quality about himself. He was a natural performer, which is why his animation was so good." Even after his illness struck, Frank continued to animate. He was an ambitious guy, always ready to make the next step. But the illness was gaining on him just as he hit his peak of excellence as an artist and as a person. Some would call Frank Braxton's life one of hard-fought, hard-earned achievement. Though few people in animation even know his name today, he was our Jackie Robinson. Yet, Frank Braxton was determined to not be a symbol. He wasn't a Black animator. He was an animator, and a dang good one. Frank passed at the peak of his career at only 40 years old. And that was kind of heartbreaking to realize once I finished everything that Frank was only 40. And I know if you're younger, 40 may seem quote unquote old, but it really isn't. The older you get, the more you realize how some of the ages you thought were old are really not that old. And I can only imagine what else Frank would have done with his time here. He was only 40 and he was right at that peak. I feel like if he had more time, he was only going to go further upward. So the next time that you're watching a cartoon or you see an animated special, an animated commercial, I hope that you think of Frank and his contributions to breaking down that race barrier in not only animation, but Hollywood overall. I hope that you share this episode with someone and that you remember that you too are Black history. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. It helps us be discovered so that others can hear the stories of the people that we talk about. You can follow our pages for more Black history figures at Black History Moments on Instagram and Facebook. This podcast was written and produced by me, Shakira White. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.